I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the city of Seattle has spent billions of dollars to update its waterfront to make it more attractive for visitors. The problem is nobody wants to visit the city still. Why? Plus, the Secretary of State's office is pushing back against claims made by Glenn Morgan that 1 in 7 Washington voters would be illegal under the SAVE Act, which is being considered right now in Congress. And never mind any real help, one Washington city is offering free gender care for the homeless. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. And welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Welcome to our final live show of the week. So we've been talking a lot about the city of Seattle specifically this week for a variety of reasons, but it all contributes to the reality that we just are in a crisis. Even if they want to ignore it, even if they want to downplay it, even if they want to blame it on Donald Trump, the city of Seattle has been a slow motion train wreck for a long time. I've lived here for 15 years. I've lived in Seattle for 11 of those years, almost my entire adult life. It is not the city it was when I moved there first, when I was like 21. It's just not. And, you know, one of the frustrating things to me is these people who like the mayor or whatever it is, and they claim to love the city and care about the city, yet they just flat out ignore the real cause of the crises that we're seeing and do all these things that they know won't work, that'll cost a bunch of money. And to me, you can't love the city if you refuse to actually identify the problems that are vexing the city. And if you go back 15 years or so, think of how much money you, taxpayers in the city, in the county, state taxpayers, the federal government, have put into trying to beautify Seattle. Think about it. Billions of dollars. You remember, they did a deep bore tunnel through underneath the city. Hundreds of millions of millions of millions of dollars over budget, way, way past overdue on schedule. You remember what a disaster that was? But everybody said, oh my gosh, it'll be worth it. We had this big, ugly two-story viaduct that went along the front of the city. It separated Pike Place Market from the waterfront area. And they said, who cares if we spend, I don't know, an extra billion dollars on things here and there and being late? It's going to reinvent and reimagine Seattle. So we went through all of that nonsense and I thought it was a great idea. Now, I would have liked it to be on time and on budget. But at the end of the day, I'm like, yeah, get rid of that ugly viaduct. And I want to be able to walk easily from Pike Place Market down to the waterfront and all these things. So we went through all of that. And then, of course, the work started beautifying the whole area. Okay, now the viaduct is down. Now we're going to have this grand sort of plaza area for tourists. And it'll just be seamless from downtown to the waterfront. We'll have all these. It'll be invigorated. It'll be amazing. How much money do they spend on that element of it? The last numbers we saw were from the Seattle Times. The cost of remaking Seattle's waterfront, it's like $1 billion. And that's just for, by the way, the waterfront portion of it. So again, we're not talking about, you know, digging a giant tunnel under the city to put SR-99. So we're billions and billions of dollars in, but for the Alaskan Way pedestrian promenade, the pier rehabilitations, Overlook Walk and East-West connections, the Seattle Aquarium expansion, the Pike Place Market front, all of those things, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to reimagine Seattle, make it a more beautiful place to visit. What's the result of all of that? People still don't want to come here. People still don't want to visit. In fact, of all the cities in the nation, all of them, Seattle is going to see the biggest drop in tourism this year. There's this new report out, and one of the elements I want to focus on is the international visitors. Seattle is going to have fewer international visitors than 2024, so in 2025. And recent data from Oxford Economics says Seattle is predicted to see a 27% fall in overnight international visitors in 2025. That is the biggest drop among U.S. cities, Portland, Oregon being the second, with an 18.4% percent decrease. And of course, they're trying to paint it as, well, it's not all bad news. That number is going to go up over the next 2 years. Yeah, because we have World Cup coming. So it's bound to go up a little bit, but it's still not great. And I'll get to what they blame it on, because I'm sure you can already guess what, or rather who, they're blaming all this on. But think about this. For the last 15 years, we've been in this transformational period for the city of Seattle, where they want to make it a more beautiful place to visit, want to, you know, go back to the days of being a world-class city. We're digging a hole underneath the city. We're putting a road down there. We're getting rid of the viaduct. We're beautifying this. We're connecting Pike Place to the waterfront. It's going to be amazing. We've spent billions of dollars. Of any city in the nation, tourism is dropping faster here than anywhere else. And they want to blame, what do you think they want to blame? Well, Orange Man Bad, of course. One of the reasons, and Oxford Economics points to this, is because border visitors from Canada. You know, because Trump's mean or whatever, has been mean to Canada. And so the reason that we would attribute Seattle having the largest drop in overnight international visitors is because fewer Canadians are coming here. Now, you could look at that and say, well, that's legitimate if Seattle were the only major city on the border with Canada. But of course, we have a big, long border with Canada that extends all the way to the other coast of America. And still, where you're seeing the impact on tourism is here, is Portland. And when you look at other economic indicators, right, that are happening in Seattle, the interesting thing is, and this is all from, by the way, the economic and revenue forecast for August of 2025. So this is the brand new information from the Office of Economic and Revenue Forecasts and the City of Seattle Budget Office. So when they're looking at, you know, maybe some of the good news economically, which I think this is going to underscore the point I'm making, the economic outlook, they say, has improved somewhat since April. So that, you know, shouldn't have any impact on visitors. Tariffs, they say, have not resulted in higher inflation, although they put yet in parentheses. Regional inflation forecast for Seattle metro area, they say it's actually cooled down. So like inflation, the cost of goods here, these things aren't going up. The economic outlook has actually improved since April. The regional employment forecast, they say, for the Seattle Metropolitan Division is that the U.S. economy is avoiding a recession. It's maybe outperforming what some expectations were. Okay, so like people aren't poor, basically. People are doing just fine. So why aren't they visiting? And why aren't they spending money here? So when you look at the next slide, collection outlook and forecast risks sales tax, look how much the sales tax in the city of Seattle has plummeted. Sales tax collections, and this is across all sectors, including leisure and hospitality, absolutely plummeting. And it's been plummeting since the second half of 2023. So when you try to piece all of that together, right, and you look at, okay, we've spent billions of dollars to make the city more appealing to tourists, all economic indicators nationally, because you have to look at them nationally, right? Because that would explain how Seattle is performing from a tourism perspective compared to other cities. Economic indicators nationally are good. Seattle is not the only major border city that has visitors from Canada. So if Canadians are really that mad at Donald Trump or scared to come here or something, it should be affecting other border cities as well. What do you want to bet in this entire economic and revenue forecast that they left out anything about crime and homelessness? It was many pages long. Do you think they had one reference to crime and homelessness in there as maybe an explanation for why people aren't coming to downtown Seattle and spending money, whether locally or international visitors? Not one reference to how bad it is down there. Not one reference to the fact that in the heart of the city, just blocks off, steps off from what are supposed to be our best tourist destinations, you have people folded in half from the Fetty Leans, huddled around in circles, overdosing in plain sight, markets full of stolen goods. You cannot do an accurate assessment of what's happening with Seattle from a tourist perspective without factoring in the crime and the homelessness and the substance abuse. You cannot do it. You cannot do it, but they ignore it. Why? Do they just not want to contend with it? Do they want to ignore it? Do they think talking about it more will mean that less people want to visit here? So instead, we'll literally just put lipstick on a pig, and it'll be the most expensive lipstick money can buy and the ugliest possible pig you could put it on. They've spent 15 years putting billions of dollars worth of lipstick on a pig. And it hasn't done any good. No one wants to sleep with the pig still. No one even wants to pet the pig, frankly. Because they don't want to get poked by a dirty needle full of fentanyl. They don't want their kids to step over someone overdosing on the sidewalk. There's a reason Seattle and Portland are having one hell of a time getting people to want to visit. The reputations of those cities are crap. And it's well deserved. So you could spend $10 more billion on the waterfront. You could, let's make it $1 trillion. Let's spend $1 trillion on the waterfront. It will still just be putting lipstick on a pig until you actually address the underlying reasons why the city looks so bad and is so unvisitable. I don't take my family there. My mom's coming in a couple weeks. You think we're going down to Pike Place Market? Hell to the no. It's insane. So you can't love Seattle unless you're willing to look at Seattle and say, there are some serious things wrong here, and they've been wrong for a long time. And we can't blame Donald Trump. We can't blame anyone else but ourselves. And I should mention, of course, the media. Because if the media was harsh enough, and the media can be harsh, there's this feeling that, oh, you know, we've got to be fair and just present. There's no both sides to this. There's no both sides to it. The media should be harsh on elected leaders in the city for what they've allowed the city to become over the last 15 years. And had they been more harsh, then I don't think we would be in this situation. The Seattle Times, of course, a prime example of that. All the crazy, several weeks of violence. We just had two people killed in a homeless encampment. Even the police chief came out and said the violence is way out of control right now. This horrible economic news about nobody wants to visit. What do you think for most of the morning, the top story was at SeattleTimes.com? You wouldn't even be able to guess it. So let me tell you. Headline, Mysterious Mosaic Rallies a Seattle Community. Oh, yes. The top story all morning during all of these crises in the city of Seattle for the newspaper of record was a story about a mosaic put up on Capitol Hill featuring a picture of a rat that said Hot Rat Summer and how members of the trans community are rallying around it. Why would the Seattle Times have that be the top story on their website at a time of such uncertainty for the city they're supposed to serve? Well, because the Seattle Times is absolute trash. Yes, we've just been on a roll this week, so let's keep going. Because this is important. I blame the media more than I blame the politicians. I don't know how many times I have to say that. The media is more to blame for the people dying in filth and squalor on the streets than the mayor of Seattle is. The media is more to blame for people not wanting to come here than the mayor of Seattle is. Because they're supposed to hold them accountable, and that accountability changes behavior. But instead, what are they reporting on? Top story. Hot Rat Summer. A mysterious Cal Anderson mosaic rallies Seattle's trans community. This is some hard-hitting stuff. Interesting that it was written by Catalina Gayton, who's the Seattle Times breaking news reporter. Let's read some of this. I don't know what's breaking news about this. It took Seattle artist Aaron Friedman and one friend some scraper tools, a jug of stripping gel, and about 4 hours under the cover of a dark March night to liberate the giant glittering rat at the heart of Cal Anderson Park. Friedman felt he was unveiling something special as he scraped gray paint off the mosaic from its narrow black tiles, spelling the word Hot Rat Summer, to its blue, white, and pink stripes of the transgender pride flag. But Friedman didn't know that within weeks, the colorful mosaic, that had laid mostly dormant for almost a year in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood would become a symbol of resilience for the city's transgender community, inspiring a fervent, almost religious devotion from those who found a patron saint in the Guerrilla Artworks star, a halo-adorned rodent dubbed Saint Rat. So this Seattle Times story, which if it was buried in the bowels of the Seattle Times, I would really not have a problem with, but given all the serious issues facing the city right now, for it to be front and center, I think requires a deeper dive into the journalistic prowess in uncovering this story. So bottom line is, a couple years ago, someone went out and at Cal Anderson Park, they illegally, without permission, made some mural of a rat with a halo on it, and it says, Hot Rat Summer, a play off the Hot Girl Summer that, you know, is apparently like some thing that I don't know much about, but I know the Kamala Harris campaign like talked about it a lot. And then the city comes out and they paint over it gray because nobody told them that they could make a mural or a mosaic of a Hot Rat Summer there. So now you've got the trans community, because there's stripes that have the trans pride flag colors, that are saying that this piece of art is like their patron saint. And they are livid with the city covering it up. And so you have this really small issue in the grand scheme of all these things happening in the city of Seattle. And not only is the Seattle Times doing a story on it, but because the Seattle Times is doing a story on it, you have Seattle City Council members, not one but two, dedicating a bunch of their time to trying to protect the patron saint Hot Rat. It says, council members Joy Hollingsworth and Alexis Mercedes Rink have supported protecting the artwork, including getting Seattle Public Utilities and Parks Department workers to stop painting over it until they find a permanent solution. They are also brainstorming ways the city can better support guerrilla artists, including creating designated public community walls where people could place their work without getting approval from the city in advance, and potentially changing the city's antiquated definition of graffiti. In fact, Joy Hollingsworth cared about this rat so much, she wanted to find the original artist to pay the artist for their work. Whether that would be with personal funds or city funds, I'm not sure. And then, when she found out that city workers had covered the mosaic again, she and Councilmember Mercedes Rink went to Cal Anderson Park that same day to clean off the paint themselves. So when you've got a symbol, apparently, of the trans community in a piece of illegal art at a city park, not only will the Seattle Times write like a 7 million word story about it and put it on the front page of seattletimes.com at a time of crisis for the city, but not one, but two council members will go to that park and they'll spend their time the same day, they'll respond the same day, scraping off a paint that their own city agency just put over it. Man, if only we could get that kind of response to graffiti elsewhere in the city. If only we could get that kind, same kind of response to people who are overdosing and dying in business alcoves. If only multiple council members would spring into action and go save their lives and get them help. But no, that has nothing to do with radical gender ideology and pandering to their base. And of course, this also is about Trump somehow mixing him all in. So there's this transgender person who's out there every day caring for the patron saint rat. And they told the Seattle Times that the layer of fresh paint felt like a personal blow. By covering up the mosaic, the city seemed to prioritize rule following over protecting a landmark cherished by constituents, especially transgender people who are facing increasing hostility under the current presidential administration. This transgender person said, we just feel like we're part of a rejection by society because the government isn't listening to us. It's not bringing anybody to the table, and that's the issue. A lot of people see the rat as an animal rejected by society, this plague we need to get rid of. And that's the way a lot of people see trans people. We have this construct of what we think the rat is, a dirty, horrible creature we need to eradicate. But it's just another animal on the planet. That's just as important as anything else. Imagine if the Seattle Times wrote something so profound about the people suffering in filth and squalor and addiction and mental crisis all over the streets of the city they're supposed to serve. Imagine if the Seattle Times wrote in-depth articles, waxing poetic, about the need to save an actual human, the way they're writing about the need to save a mosaic featuring a rat with a halo on it. So this is all part of the problem. We have pressing crises, things that aren't getting any better despite spending billions and billions of dollars on them. City leaders want you to look the other way. They want you to blame Donald Trump. They want you to blame everything else except what you actually see with your own eyes. And then you have newspapers and news agencies like the Seattle Times that will spend their journalistic efforts focusing on stories like this, on saving a rat mosaic, instead of saving human beings on the street, and in the process, saving a once great city. And why do they do that? Why do they do that, Nicole? Well, because the Seattle Times is trash. I want to follow up on a story that we talked about this week on the show, also about what's happening in the city of Seattle. And you can just copy paste this really to any West Coast city. And I think it's particularly important to discuss given the efforts of the Trump administration in Washington, D.C. right now to try to deal with their homeless crisis there in a more aggressive way. So we talked two days ago about the double homicide in Virgil Flame Park in Seattle, which is in the North Seattle neighborhood. And it wasn't just a shooting in a park. It was a shooting at a homeless encampment in a park, 15 yards from a basketball court and from a playground where kids play. And as we talked about, this particular city park has been the site of homeless encampments for years and years and years. We found posts going back to 2014, but at least since 2021, there have been, there's been an out of control homeless issue there. And the city has never dealt with it in a meaningful way. In fact, just like 2 months ago, a month ago, they quote unquote swept the park. And the neighbor said, oh, the homeless people came back immediately. And there was more of them than came back than there was even in the first place. So, of course, after the shooting happened, which was on Sunday, the city posted a nice polite notice saying, hey, you got to, move your stuff because we're going to come in here and sweep it. And the city did sweep it. What do you think happened? They just moved two blocks down to another park. Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle posting pictures from a neighbor who sent this, saw drug deal go down, then guy flashed a hunting knife when he saw us taking photos. The group at Albert Davis Park moved from Virgil Flame. So now they're at Albert Davis Park, just a couple blocks away. And similar to the park they were at with the shooting, this is around kids. There's a playground there. There's what looks like a skate park there. So this place that's paid for with taxpayer funds that is supposed to be for kids to enjoy is now the site of a homeless camp that was just swept by the city of Seattle from a different park blocks away that resulted in a double murder. So we're not improving anything here. And look, I still think sweeps should happen because we can't allow homeless people to be comfortable in a place, especially when they're being offered services and help and all of these things. And then they just, stay there for years and years and years, and there's no incentive for them to move, for them to go elsewhere, for them to finally seek assistance. So I'm all for sweeps, and I know that sometimes sweeps can result in point A to point B. But when you've just had a camp that was the site of a double homicide, because clearly there's drug activity happening there, and one of the predominant concerns is the shooting happened 15 yards from where kids were playing basketball. Why would you, as the city, allow those individuals to immediately just move down the street to another park, only to allow the same thing to happen again? You know, they want to have all these, we have to be kind. You got to give them 72 hours notice, then store their stuff. No, you don't. We have ordinances on the books for this. Two people are dead. It could have been kids. But we have this hands-off approach where people can just pick up a tent, move it over here, and they get another 72 hours. And they pick up the tent, they move it over here, they get another 72 hours. And we coddle them every step of the way instead of, throwing them in jail. Have to do it. Is it the first option? No, it shouldn't be. offer them help, offer them services. The city of Seattle does not do homeless camp sweeps without offering services, period. And usually it's multiple times where they'll go into an encampment, say it's going to be swept on such and such a day. We're here again offering you services. We have to start saying it's services or jail. Similar to what President Donald Trump is now doing in Washington, D.C. And this isn't like some anomaly. In fact, Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle also last night posted these pictures from Dr. Jose Rizal Park. Oh, God forbid you want to go with your family and use their barbecues, have a picnic. No, there's a guy who's built a tent shelter in there. And I also wouldn't use the picnic tables there because they use them. They literally start fires on them to keep warm. So all this tax money you're paying for the parks and you want to say that you're environmentalists and you love nature and you love beauty. No, you don't. And you don't love these people either. You might say, oh, leave them there out of compassion. It's not compassionate. Somebody's probably going to come and kill them because homeless people are more likely to be the victims of crimes. It's just insane. It's absolutely insane. So if there's a shooting or another act of violence and a civilian or a child is hurt over at this new park where they moved to, this Albert Davis Park, sue the city. Absolutely sue the city. It's just, I don't know what's going to fix it at this point. It's insane. All right, coming up next, the Secretary of State's office is pushing back against a report from We the Govern's Glenn Morgan, claiming that 1 in 7 Washington voters are technically illegal under federal law or would be if the SAFE Act passes. So we'll have their version of events. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure that you get the most possible eyeballs on your listing. That's really important right now because the listings are growing by the day. We actually have there's a ton of homes on the market compared to even 4 or 5 months ago, but home values are still high. So they're still selling at great prices. But of course, you have more competition. It means that, yeah, maybe you need to put a little bit of work into your home, cosmetic upgrades, and you just need to make sure that your listing stands out. So those are two things Wes Jones and his team specialize in: the marketing behind it, making sure that their listings stand out, and helping you via their Listing Boost concierge service to make sure that if there's any cosmetic upgrades you need to make to your home, they can help you come in, manage those projects, take the stress completely out of the equation for you, and you don't even have to pay for them until closing, which obviously takes a lot of stress out of the process because nobody wants to come out of pocket tens of thousands of dollars when they're trying to sell their home. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Okay, so on Sundays with Subscribers, we had Glenn Morgan on the show. He's a government watchdog extraordinaire. And he did a great video, if you haven't watched it already, about, so right now there's something that Congress is considering called the SAVE Act. And essentially, it would mandate de facto voter ID across the entire country because it would have to have certain requirements in order to be a registered voter and to participate in things like the presidential election. And the requirements that it would put forth, Washington State doesn't require here. And so it would require us, even though we're not a voter ID state, to essentially enact some more stringent protocols. So what Glenn Morgan's video talked about, and I'll play a clip here, is he had gotten data from several county auditors across the state, not all of them, but a lot of them. And to him, looking at the data, it showed that there was roughly 1 in 7 Washington voters who under the SAVE Act would technically be illegal today.
Let's go back to what was discovered when we actually looked upon review of the Franklin County data, and I'm saying they discovered this. And what they really discovered was the disturbing fact that 14% of these voters, at most of which are actually active voters, not old voters, I mean, these are people who vote right now, they don't have any Social Security numbers referenced in the state's data at all. Now, under HAVA, which is the federal voting law, they're not required to put it in there, but it's nevertheless the point that it's not in there. And including in that 14% is 0.5% of the voters who actually don't have any identification of any kind at all, no driver's license or Social Security number of any kind, which kind of actually makes you wonder how they ever were able to be registered to vote in the first place.
Yeah, it sure does. We'll give an explanation in a moment. But basically, what he's talking about are two separate groups of people. There's a little overlap there. But one is a smaller subset where they got like nothing. There's no ID in there. There's no Social Security number. He says that's a small subset of that 1 in 7 or 14%. And then the larger subset is individuals who are registered to vote in the state of Washington who don't have a Social Security number associated with their voter registration. So that's very important because As soon as Glenn Morgan's video came out, and he was on with us on Sunday, but he also released a very lengthy video about this whole issue and all the data that he dug up. It's 30 minutes long. We, of course, had him on, and then we reached out to the Secretary of State's office, and they're just saying flat out, those numbers aren't true. Now, spoiler alert, they probably are true, but I'll read you what the Secretary of State's office said. So his office said, claims in the video are not accurate and draw conclusions based on incomplete information. The actual number of registered voters without a form of documented identification in their voter registration is less than 13,000 of the 5,067,332 active statewide voter registrations. This is less than 0.25% compared to the 14% that constitutes a 1 in 7 figure. Now, I'm going to come back to this, but I want to keep reading from this statement because they explain sort of the reason, because they're admitting there at least, right, that 13,000 voters don't have an ID. So I think that's significant. They go on to say why that is. Prior to the passage of the Help America Vote Act in 2002, ID was not a requirement for voter registration. Voters registered before its passage were not required to re-register. The number of registered voters without a form of verified ID in their voter registration continues to trend downward and is monitored closely by election officials. They go on to say current laws require a Washington State driver's license number or the last four digits of a person's Social Security number to verify identity. So let me explain all that, and then I'm gonna go back to those numbers that the Secretary of State's office. So there was something called the Help America Vote Act in 2002. So basically what they're saying is before that happened, there is a number of voters in Washington State who were registered pre-2022, who are still registered voters in the state of Washington, who were not required to give any form of ID. So they didn't have to give a driver's license and they didn't have to give a Social Security number. So that figure represents what they say is a shrinking population, because I hate to be crass, but some of those people are probably dying, right? I mean, not that 2002 is such a long time ago, or they moved out of state or something like that. Sorry, I shouldn't just go to the worst case scenario. So maybe they've passed away, or maybe they've moved out of state and registered elsewhere. So they're saying, yes, there's a subset prior to 2002 who have no voter or anything like that, but it's dwindling over time. And they're saying, and it's not as big as Glenn Morgan would have you believe, it's 0.25%. It's not 14%, it's not 1 in 7, except they're not actually responding to the entirety of what Glenn Morgan is claiming. As he told us in his statement, he said, the man from the Secretary of State's office who gave us that statement, he's ignoring the list of people without Social Security numbers. He can dispute the final numbers because he has access to all 39 counties, but he won't reveal this number because it's bad. So what the Secretary of State's office isn't accounting for in its statement to us is the people who have maybe a driver's license, but they don't have a Social Security number. And Glenn Morgan, if you can, Nicole, can you play the first clip from Glenn Morgan? To me, in his video, Glenn Morgan made it very clear that there were two subsets. The larger subset were people without a Social Security number, and then included in that was a small, small subset, maybe around 0.25%, that didn't have an ID or a Social Security number.
Let's go back to what was discovered when we actually looked upon review of the Franklin County data, and I'm saying they discovered this. And what they really discovered was the disturbing fact that 14% of these voters, at most of which are actually active voters, not old voters, I mean, these are people who vote right now, they don't have any Social Security numbers referenced in the state's data at all. Now, under HAVA, which is the federal voting law, they're not required to put it in there, but it's nevertheless the point that it's not in there. And including in that 14% is 0.5% of the voters who actually don't have any identification of any kind at all, no driver's license or Social Security number of any kind, which kind of actually makes you wonder how they ever were able to be registered to vote in the first place.
So Glenn is making a very nuanced, he's making a very nuanced point. That for some reason, I guess the Secretary of State's office, when it denied his reporting, either failed to see or intentionally is ignoring. So I want to make sure that you're following me here, because this is going to be this back and forth, back and forth. So he's saying based on, and he has to extrapolate some data, right? Because he only got access to a certain number of counties. So in those certain number of counties got access to this data, roughly 1 in 7 voters either have no Social Security number or have no Social Security number and no ID in there. That's the point that Glenn made from the very beginning. And then you have the Secretary of State's office saying, well, that's not true. It's not one in seven. It's like 0.25%. But they're only factoring in the people who don't have an ID or a Social Security number, and they're not factoring in the larger segment of people who don't have a Social Security number. You follow me? Glenn posted a follow-up video kind of reacting to what the Secretary of State's office is saying.
Keep in mind, I only indirectly had access to the lack of Social Security information in 29 of the 39 counties. Stuart Holmes, he has access to all 39 county data. And well, my 709,000 number is the closest that I can extrapolate under the presumption that the percentages stay roughly in line with the 29 counties that have already been reviewed. It is quite possible that Stuart can clarify. Maybe it's actually 800,000, or maybe it's 500,000. But obviously, that is a data set that they just want to keep concealed from us for now. And that number's very secret. It's very scary, apparently. However, where I'm eternally grateful for Stuart Holmes is his willingness here to admit that at least 13,000 Washington State voters both don't have any Social Security numbers or any ID reference of any kind, no driver's license, anything, in our state's voter database system, which based on the review of 29 counties I've seen, that number appears to be closer to 25,000. But Stuart's initial reluctant admission, I'm sure it's the first time right now that this information has ever been officially revealed to the public.
So that's important. And I think that's the important takeaway. The state, because of all this, they've admitted that there is a segment of voters in the state of Washington that they've explained the reason why, that don't have an ID or a Social Security number. So they've given up that data. But will they give up the rest? If they're saying Glenn's reporting's not true, that one in seven Washington voters are lacking a Social Security number, show us. You have the data, you have the information, release it. You release the number on the small subset, what would stop you from releasing the larger number? Are you embarrassed by the number? Do you know the number is bad? We also, by the way, asked the Secretary of State's office, what are you going to do if the SAFE Act passes? So are you planning for that? Are you planning how you're going to go around and collect some form of identification, a Social Security number it would have to be, because you can get a driver's license in the state of Washington and be a non-citizen. So what are your plans if it is one in seven Washington voters to comply with the Federal SAFE Act? And they basically said, well, it's not law yet, so they haven't given us details on what they would do in that eventuality. Now, they also made another claim in their email to us that I think is unfair and I think is worth pointing out. Secretary of State Steve Hobbs' office said, just because a voter does not have their Social Security number in their registration does not automatically infer they do not have one, nor that they are not a citizen. Immediately classifying someone lawfully registered to vote as illegal because this information is not present is irresponsible. Well, it's a good thing we didn't do that and Glenn didn't do that. In fact, if you go back to watch Sundays with Subscribers, I specifically say, I'm not saying and Glenn's not saying that these voters aren't legal, just that they're lacking this piece of data that if the SAFE Act passes, they will have to have. If for whatever reason they did not provide a Social Security number and some other form of identification, then the state would have to go out and gather it. And then we'd find out, you know, are there some that are illegal? I'm sure. Are there a ton who are probably, I said this on the show over and over. Are there a ton of those one in seven who probably are able to vote legally? Yes, of course. But we're talking about still an absence of data. So Glenn never said, and I never said, in the title of Glenn's video, it never said, it never classified these as illegal. No, just that there's missing data and that will become a problem if federal law changes. So the whole statement we got from the Secretary of State's office, I appreciate them communicating with us on it, but it didn't capture the nuance of Glenn's reporting, and it accused him of doing something that he hasn't done and certainly that I haven't done. So we'll continue to follow up with them on that. And this is an important issue. And don't you think it's crazy that, so one of the issues that we've gone back and forth with the Secretary of State's office a lot is this issue of illegals, right? So in our state, there is no requirement to prove citizenship to register to vote. Let me repeat that. In Washington state, there is no requirement to prove citizenship to register to vote. You know what you have to do? Scout's honor. Scout's honor 4 or 3? 3. You have to just say, you just attest to it. When you fill out a form, you attest that you're legally allowed to vote. It's an honor system. Now, of course, if you're illegal and you vote and someone finds out about it, it's a Class C felony. But that's if someone finds out about it. But if you're illegal in Washington state, it would actually be very easy to get a ballot. super easy, because it's super easy to get a driver's license. You're treated no different than any other actual citizen of Washington state. And of course, you don't need a social security number. All you need is a driver's license. And that's good enough for the state of Washington post 2002 to register to vote. And then you check a little box that says, yep, I'm legally allowed to vote. You get a ballot, you send it in. And you could do that knowingly or unknowingly. Maybe you didn't understand. Maybe you got the ballot in the mail and there was a language barrier and you just assumed I got a ballot, let me vote. It's still a felony. Doesn't mean it has to be nefarious. But we have no safeguard for this. Isn't that a problem? It's super crazy. So I am more inclined to believe Glenn's assessment. And he admits his data is incomplete. The only entity, there's two entities. There's only two entities that could put this to rest. The federal government, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Secretary of State's office. If the Secretary of State's office wants to put it to rest, they could today. So I would, of course, encourage them to do so. Transparency is always best. All right, let's see. We've kind of ditched unbelievable this week in favor of our new segment, The Seattle Times is Trash. So just so no one gets the withdrawals, let's talk about all the gender nonsense happening down in Olympia in our segment. Oldie but a goodie, unbelievable. Boop. All right, let's go down to Olympia, Washington, which, if you're not familiar, is, you know, Seattle light, essentially. So Olympia has a pretty serious homelessness issue as well. If I had to rank it just by, not even using data, just using my brain, I would say like Seattle, Olympia, Bellingham. Is that fair? Seattle, maybe Seattle, Spokane, Olympia, Bellingham, somewhere in there. They all have a pretty profound homeless crisis. I would say Seattle, Bellingham, and Olympia are a little worse because they're on the west side. But, you know, it's awful. So, of course, I would say, well, you know, we got to get them treatment and help people and all of these things. So the city of Olympia and these nonprofits that operate in Olympia, they're going to get people treatment, Nicole. I'm so happy to see this. I'm so happy to see this. Despite how woke they are and how progressive, they're focused on what really matters. They are going to get these homeless people suffering on the streets in filth and squalor the treatment they need. The gender treatment they need. Ah, yes. Never mind helping with actual life and death issues. No-cost medical services for adults 18 and over living on the streets. You can get, oh, let's see some of these options. Hormone replacement therapy, follow-up monitoring in labs. Now, in fairness, this would be for anyone 18 plus who's uninsured or underinsured at no cost to the patient, but this flyer sent to us by a viewer was posted at an Olympia homeless shelter. So, yeah.
Isn't it illegal to be uninsured?
Is it illegal to be uninsured?
Yeah, in the state. You're not allowed to be uninsured.
You're not?
Well, you have to have insurance. It's affordable. I mean, right? Yes.
I don't know. What do they do for homeless people then?
Well.
Just the Medicaid?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, it doesn't matter in this case because you're getting your boobs cut off for free. No, I think this is just gender hormone therapy.
But can you imagine, like, you the care that requires after you start treatment?
Yeah, but Nicole, and, it says follow-up monitoring in labs.
I know. So, yeah, I guess there you go.
So never mind getting off drugs or whatever is, you know, helping them out. Maybe it was something that could save their life.
Right. Get off this, get a home. Like, maybe you need a job. Oh, no. Maybe you need some mental health help.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think they need mental health.
You just need appendages cut off.
In fact, it's transphobic for you to suggest that people who want, you know, their appendages cut off would need mental health help at the same time.
Right.
Crazy. Also happening in Olympia, although it's technically statewide. So there was this bulletin a viewer sent me. It was the August 2025 Washington Office of Superintendent Public Instruction Sexual Health Education Bulletin. So it's basically sexual health education news and resources for August of 2025. When you think, a sane person, sexual health education in the context of a school setting, because this is from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, like, what do you think of? Sexual health education.
Like safe sex, maybe.
Yeah. How babies
on the
are
grade.
Made. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The stuff you learned. Like, hey, you might even learn about, as a girl, your your period,
your cycle, things like that.
You might learn about what do they call it when they want to puberty.
Yes,
but
yeah.
They probably don't teach you about that because they're trying to teach you to block your puberty, right?
Right.
But that's like if for the state office of superintendent of public instruction sending out sexual health education information and resources, I would expect reasonably for that to be about safe sex, all these things. Look how much of this is about radical gender nonsense. Intersex inclusion and sex education. The intersex population, it's, what is it, 0.001? This is like a medical anomaly. And that's the top thing. Intersex inclusion and sex education. Promoting inclusive education hub from the National Education Association, of course. Supporting LGBTQ plus mental health in schools. 6 ways to counter hate and build welcoming, supportive schools. This one's my favorite. School nurses, an upstream investment for achieving menstrual equity. Nicole, what's menstrual equity?
You know what? You got me on that one. I don't really know.
I think equity should be if I have a bad period, you have to have a bad period too.
Oh, okay.
If I get cramps, you have to get cramps too.
Okay, I was going to say if like a girl that has bad cramps and has to go home, she doesn't get docked a day off school.
Yeah, you'd think maybe. Okay, no, but this of course is, men think they're women, they need menstrual equity.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so amid declining test scores and all of that, this is the important stuff that the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction is focused on. Just solving problems.
Of all the things we talk about, this might make me the most angry because I really think you're confusing kids, kids, contributing to their mental health decline. I think this might make me more angry than anything because everything else is dealing with adults, Everything else we talk about is dealing with adults and, hopefully as children, they're given the tools to combat stupidity as adults. But obviously we're not giving them those tools.
We're actively hiding those tools from them. And we want kids to be absolutely mentally deranged, thinking that they're boys and they can get periods and they deserve menstrual equity and all this stuff. It's just wild. How anybody votes for these people is beyond me. Unbelievable. All right. We will I want to fit in one more local story before we get to national because this one's also kind of crazy to me. But first, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Why? You could save a bunch of money. And then you get great service. It's totally a no-brainer. I'm a member of the First Mark family. So many Undivided viewers and listeners are members of the First Mark family. And it starts by taking the First Mark challenge. Just schedule some time. Say, hey, Brandy told me to schedule some time with you to go over your current insurance. Talk about your insurance needs. They'll go out. They'll shop the market for you. They'll come back with their recommendations. And they might say, hey, you're doing a great job. You've picked the best insurance that you can get at the best price. Or they'll say, we can actually save you hundreds or thousands of dollars a year. So to me, it's just a win-win situation. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, so Governor Bob Ferguson, of course, he's out solving all sorts of problems, like giving preferential treatment in state contracts to small businesses, depending on the gender of the sexual partners of those businesses' owners. And it's just all of this is like the lipstick on a pig thing. And, making a problem worse so they can profit from the problem, take more of your money, and then push it out to their cronies and allies. They do that in the homeless industrial complex quite a bit. And as part of that, in the affordable housing complex, but I think that's part of the housing industrial complex. So Bob Ferguson put out a press release. Governor Ferguson announces $212 million in funding for affordable rental housing statewide. They say that the Department of Commerce is accepting applications through October 16th for 2 affordable housing opportunities. So we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in state contracts to build affordable multifamily rental housing funding. Okay. So in a nutshell, if you're a builder or developer and you want to apply, you can get hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to put up affordable housing. And on its face, if you didn't know anything else about what was happening in housing in the state of Washington, you might say, okay, that's not like the worst thing in the world. There are, of course, two main problems with this. One is the most obvious. You have, through your actions, made housing unaffordable. you passed rent control, which will be devastating for the housing market. As we talked about on the show on Monday, you just came out and talked and bragged about how you threw the book at small landlords who accidentally violated the new rent control policy, including forcing the a mobile home park to pay you a bunch of money. And can you think of more affordable housing than a mobile home park? So everything they've done has made housing less available and less affordable, and it will continue to go in that direction. So them now saying, oh my gosh, we need more affordable housing, you know, we've got $214 million to throw at the problem. It's a problem you created. It's a problem you're making worse every single day. So that's one of the fundamental parts of this that bothers me. But the other part is a little more complex, and I guess you'd have to watch our show regularly for it to stand out to you. How many stories have we done in the last 6 months to a year about the crisis facing current affordable housing units, current affordable housing providers? There have been multiple stories over the past 6 months to a year about the fact that the existing affordable housing providers can't do it anymore. They can't survive. They can't turn even a little bit of a profit. They can't get people to pay their rent. Just a few of the headlines, Spokesman Review, Seattle's affordable housing industry is in crisis. The Seattle Times, Seattle landlord sues over city tenant protections. Remember, that was that low-income building in downtown Seattle where he said all the city policies have made it so we can't screen our tenants, we can't collect rent, we can't evict people. It's basically a government taking of private property. This from Publicola. Affordable housing providers are losing money and selling their buildings, and they're blaming eviction protections. So you've created an environment where not only has it driven the cost of housing up, but starting in earnest during the pandemic, you made it almost impossible for any landlord to be able to run their unit in a way that's profitable and sane, because they can't get people out of there who don't pay rent. They can't force people to pay rent. In some places, they can't screen for criminal history. The city of Olympia doesn't even want you to be able to screen for someone's how much money they make. So that hurt, it turned out, although the woke left wanted to do this, who all of those tenant protections ended up hurting the most were low-income housing providers, because they're already operating on these razor-thin margins. And they have people who are poor living there, and in some instances taking advantage of the system and not paying rent for months or for years. So because of Democratic and progressive policies, existing affordable housing providers are going out of business. They're selling their buildings out of the rental market, out of the affordable housing market. And now the state's saying, hey, this problem we're making worse, we're going to just keep throwing money at it. Not change anything, but we're going to keep throwing money at it. $200 million. Let's get people to build some new affordable housing units. Hey, you don't even have to build them. I've given you multiple examples of affordable, former affordable housing buildings that are probably on the market or already sold, because it's not feasible for them anymore. So if somebody is dumb enough to take you up on one of these contract opportunities to build affordable housing units after reading all of these stories, there's nothing saying that in a year they're not going to be in the same position. Filled full of people who won't pay their rent because they live in cities that basically treat the landlord as the enemy, so they don't have to pay their rent. These buildings can't turn a profit. Nobody is going to take you up on that, Governor Ferguson. Oh my God, we need to make housing more affordable. Let's do literally everything. If I had a playbook for making housing more expensive, I would just follow the playbook of Washington State Democrats. I'm going to be talking about this issue and many other issues around housing policy in the state of Washington coming up in October at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue at the Engage Conference. It's October 22nd and 23rd. Me and Jonathan Cho, we're going to be talking about all of these things, how asinine they are, how backwards all of this policy is, what is going to happen as more and more of these affordable housing providers close down and shutter their doors, etc. So join us for that. You can get tickets at rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And if you want to join the Rental Housing Association of Washington while you're there, you can do that if you are a small to mid-sized landlord. All right, it is Thursday. Gosh, we're not going to have Florida Report for, you know, Miranda's here. Is it next week? Week after next. I think I'm going to have an in-person edition of Florida Report with my sister in a couple weeks. I think that'll be fun. Why not, right? But every Thursday, we go all the way across the country to the Sunshine State to get a dose of sanity. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
First, a quick update on the alligator Alcatraz drama. So Ron DeSantis was planning to open a second one at a certain facility. We had talked about it. Plans have changed. They're still opening a second facility, but not in the same place and maybe for a slightly different purpose.
Yeah, so they have axed the idea of doing it at the National Guard Training Center at Camp Landing. Now it's going to be at a recently shuttered state prison, which isn't far from Camp Landing. It's called Baker Correctional Institute. Basically, they're doing this to avoid having to make too many structural changes to an existing facility. So this facility can already hold 1,300 inmates with the capacity maybe going up to 2,000. There's, you know, things in place where you can have 24/7 medical care. The inmates that are going to be staying there can go outside. It just kind of answers a lot of the current complaints that people are having about alligator Alcatraz. So I think that they decided this was going to be more cost effective and also just kind of, you know, scoot around future complaints for a secondary location.
There's going to be complaints anyway. I mean, we were joking on the show that one of the chief complaints for alligator Alcatraz is that they don't have air conditioning or something like that. And then here, there was a guy who was in ICE detention and he was complaining like they had too much air conditioning, like he was too cold. And then the media, yeah. So it doesn't matter. They'll find complaints and they're going to call this the deportation depot.
The deportation depot. Yeah. They are just whatever's on the marketing team. They have a lot of ideas.
Why not? Yeah, people are going to complain. It doesn't matter. I mean, you could put them in the Ritz-Carlton. They're still going to be mad about it. I mean, Literally, they were putting them in, you know, 4 or 5 star hotels in New York City and maybe not the Ritz, but and it was still just not enough, you know, not enough. I love that Florida has a chief financial officer. We don't have one of those in Washington state. Maybe that's why our budget is an absolute disaster and we're taxing people to high heaven. But you guys have a chief financial officer. His name, which I will butcher, is Blase Ingoglia. No, is that not even close?
Blaise Ingoglia.
Blase, Blaze is much better than Blase. They mean totally separate things. Ingoglia, and he gave this just killer speech about, which should be common sense. I mean, here they treat our tax money like their money, and they'll just piss it away. But not in Florida. Here he is.
Protect the taxpayer. There is no such thing as government money. It's our money. It's taxpayers' money. Stop listening to bureaucrats and start listening to your gut instincts. If it sounded like a bad idea when you were running for office, rest assured it is still a bad idea now after you got elected. Be a friend to the taxpayer, not an apologist for big government. Question everything. Let's prove we are on the side of the taxpayer by offering them real property relief next year. In fact, let's do everything that we can to get property taxes gone for those homesteaded properties.
I mean, why can't everyone who works in government understand those simple points?
It's true. And he's also the head of our DOGE efforts, our state DOGE efforts. And he's been going around city to city because one of the places that they're looking to cut government spending is in these small different cities and districts because they think that that's, you know, if they can cut government spending, that'll be one way they can justify getting rid of property taxes as well. And it's funny because right now they're actually in St. Petersburg and there's protesters. I'm like, why would you protest this? Like, you can question things all day long, but protesting to just eliminate Florida DOGE and how this is a bad idea is crazy to me. It's crazy.
Well, same reason they're in D.C. protesting that Trump is going to fight crime. And it's like, you guys are desperate. It's really sad at this point. And nothing sticks. I think that's why you see this kind of meltdown from the left is like nothing sticks against Donald Trump. nothing they're doing is working. And so you see this sort of desperation where they'll protest against what really should be common sense policies. All right, I got to talk about Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd. This guy is a soundbite machine. I mean, I do kind of worry about how much money, speaking of, you know, taxpayer funds, I worry about how much taxpayer funds he spends on the props that he uses for his press conferences, because he loves to bring out, he literally comes out for this and he's carrying like an armful of props. And I'm like, oh God, here we go again. I'm sure the media just loves it. But so there was this brawl on the beach, which is pretty horrible to watch. It's like adults beating each other. There's tiny children around. And can I just say something about this really quick before we get into Judd? I said something on X that people were livid over, but we saw, like, for instance, that group of like black people who beat up the white people. Where was that? Cincinnati or I don't know, somewhere like that. And like knocked this woman cold. And everybody was making it about race, race, race. It's not a race issue. It's a culture issue. And it's like, you're telling me, because we are anti-identitarianism. So we believe that your skin pigmentation or these immutable characteristics, they don't dictate like your merit for anything or your behavior. It's like acting like something like skin pigmentation is why someone will brawl in front of children or punch a woman in the face. No, it's culture. And in this case, it's a bunch of uncultured Floridians having a full-on brawl in front of children. Here's Sheriff Judd with one of his just zingers.
Our Marine Patrol people are going to be out there. Some you're going to see, some you're not going to see. But write this down in your little book. We're going to put people in jail this weekend for conduct that we previously tried to warn you about. So go home and get your bond money together right now. You can carry it in your pocket. It'll help you get out of jail quicker. We're going to take you to jail, but also bring enough money, because we're going to tow your truck. We're going to tow your car. We're going to tow your wave runners. We're going to lock y'all up until you figure out that you can't misbehave in the community, that you can't fight, that you can't knock people unconscious. It's over, folks. It's over.
Yeah, he said that this particular, it's called the point where people meet up on Lake Winterset. Have you ever been there, by the way?
I haven't, but I have been up in the Polk County area where he's the sheriff.
Is it super uncultured? Like, what are there?
No, I mean, I think every area, every largely populated area in the country has its ruffians, you know, and Orlando, this is just the southwest side of Orlando. You know, it's not immune to that type of culture issue.
Yeah. So trashy white people will come out to the point. They'll fight. He says they defecate and engage in sexual activity. And as a result, they have, quote, unleashed the teeth of the dog. And now it's going to start biting you. I love this guy. Yeah. I hope he never leaves office.
No, we love him. And he always brings photos.
Right.
And he does it so there's no miscommunication. If you can't hear, you can't, you know, you can't read. He's got pictures. It is picture graphs of what a riot looks like, what a protest looks like. It doesn't matter what he's talking about. He always has some good props that he comes with. And he reminds me of like the dad we maybe didn't want when we were growing up, but the dad we all needed when we were growing up. Like a very no-nonsense, just like straight to business kind of guy. And I like him. I hope we see more of him.
Yeah, like I said, I just love this older man who loves his job so much, and he heads out. I mean, you just see he's got a whole arm full of props and pictures that he's going to show of everyone who was arrested and all this stuff. It's just funny. We need more of that. It's just good stuff. Yeah. Okay, Miranda, we appreciate it.
Have a great weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. All right, I can't just throw y'all red meat all the time, so I got some well, it's not really stories, but my assessment of stories that'll probably anger my more conservative viewers today, but, you know, I gotta have some of that, gotta mix it up occasionally. I don't understand why conservatives are getting so bent out of shape about all these professional sports teams that are debuting their new male cheerleaders. So one of them is the Minnesota Vikings. I think we have video of it.
So he's, you know, he's not dressed as a cheerleader. He's got, I mean, he is, but like, it's not like he's got a skirt on. He's got shorts on, happy smile. And so for some reason, I don't know if this is the time of year where they're debuting all their new cheerleaders, but this is like all the bunch of sports teams have been out. They've been showing, you know, their cheerleaders, and a bunch of them have men. Is this something new? Why are conservatives losing their mind over this? They're sharing it. It's like, people, I'm angry. Male cheerleaders, you remember Bring It On? You remember the quintessential cheerleading movie? They had dude cheerleaders. They threw the chicks up in the air. Am I crazy? Why has this become a thing?
Job. Like, he it was announced as the lead cheerleader. And so
maybe he's the best cheerer.
Acting at, or he's doing the same job as those, the girls. He's not just throwing the girls up in the air. So he's got the same gig as the girls, I guess.
I would get it if they're dressed as the girls. I would get it. This is really a consequence, I think, of what we've warned about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all the radical stuff with the alphabet mob and all of that nonsense. I said it's going to get so out of control that it's going to set gay rights back. And I don't even know that guy's gay. I mean, I'm just assuming based on how he looks. I guess that's not very nice. But this is it. It's like all of a sudden now, because you guys like tried to push so much nonsense on us from the radical gender ideology, I think people are taking it out on just your run-of-the-mill gays. And it's starting to bother me. There's no reason to get mad about dude cheerleaders.
I actually don't think it's a new thing. I'm going to take this down. But I don't think it's a new thing that people are upset about dude cheerleaders. I think that's been happening in sports for a while, that people have been like, hey, it's for male sports. Male sports are for males, are like geared towards males.
But it's not a competition. And it's just people cheering for their team.
The cheerleaders were supposed to be for male viewers.
So male viewers can go and like get their rocks off, and the dudes being there too is hurting their ability to like get their rocks off?
Well, you know what? I want to be on your side about this. I kind of am like, let the chicks have a thing. I actually am kind of on the side of, it's kind of ridiculous. Why can't chicks just have a thing and we have cheerleading? And it's always been like a female thing, and let the chicks have a thing. I get it. Like, girls want to, or guys might help. They need some muscle to throw the girls up in the air. And so I appreciate like their help in the back, I guess. But at the same time, I'm more impressed when it's girls lifting up the girls in the back and throwing them up. Like, that's impressive to me.
So should the cheerleaders?
Why does it always have to have guys be a part of it?
So should the WNBA cheerleaders be boys?
Sure. Yes.
And the only boys and no girls allowed?
Sure. If that's a thing, I guess you have to. So, yeah, I mean, we could get into a whole thing, but, you know, with the whole, I mean, you don't have a job if you don't bring in the viewers and the funds, right?
Yeah.
And so when they're like, ooh, we need the same pay, well, your league doesn't make the same kind of money
right.
as the men. And like, so don't start with me on all that, right?
Yeah.
And the same thing with the cheerleaders, the female cheerleaders, like, sorry, like they do get the attention of the male gawkers, right? Yeah, that's just the thing. And like, and they work hard for it. They are hard workers and they work hard for it. And it takes a lot of work to look that pretty all the time. And while you're doing a lot of work and I just think like, let them have it.
I don't know.
Let them have their thing.
Here's the good news. I made this our daily subscriber show.
I know.
So we can
and
see
I just
how
gave
many
the answer
people,
early.
We can see how many people agree with you versus me. I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals and X, is it woke for professional sports teams to have male cheerleaders? Yes or no? I'm saying no, because when there were male cheerleaders in Bring It On, I didn't think that was woke. And again, if they were dressing like the girls and pretending to be women and out there taking women's spaces, I would feel totally differently about it. So let's see. 69% of our subscribers say they do not think it is woke. 31% say yes. Michelle says there have been male cheerleaders, yell leaders forever. We had them in high school back in the 70s. They're much better at throwing the cheer squad up in the air, catching them. But I got to say that the Minnesota Vikings guy, he has good form. He's just looks as happy and cheerful as the rest of them. It just doesn't bother me. Let me see. Or in high school, lots of times there is only one guy cheerleader and they often put him in the center, I guess, to balance it out. So that kind of makes sense. Robert, there have been both male and female cheerleaders supporting school and college sports for decades. What is the problem? I don't know. People, conservatives on X are losing their minds about it. Steven, male cheerleaders are fine. Keep it male and female. Gender identity should not be in sports. Tony, when I was young, I think it was at U of Michigan, they had male cheerleaders on the football cheer squad. Very acrobatic and impressive. No worries there. Yeah, I mean, that's mostly...
I don't think that the male cheerleaders of yesteryear ever ever worked the pom-poms like this particular man.
You're saying they're too gay for you.
No, I'm just saying that's the difference between... That's where it's evolving. So before, it was they stood in the back and they held the girls up and they were the muscles. And now they have the pom-poms and they're doing the little shake your booty... moves, and that's the difference. So I think when people answer the question, they're like, "Oh, it's this. It's been like that for years." Well, no, it's definitely evolved. So, are you okay with? I think the question could be phrased differently. Like, has it become, like, what it's become? Become woke.
Yeah, Shirley says it depends on the presentation. If they present as strong male counterparts that improve the athletics or dance or routines, then great. If they present as boys pretending to be girls, then yes, it's woke. And I agree with that. If it's like they're hiring, they're replacing chicks with dudes dressed as chicks, of course, like totally different. But yeah, I hate to see what I feel like is coming. I feel like we're going to watch that slingshot, swing back effect of, oh my God, people took wokeness to an extreme and now the right's going to take it to the extreme on the other side. You're seeing it a little bit, frankly, with race. I talked about, and I just got eviscerated on the internet for suggesting that, you know, beating a woman in broad daylight isn't a race issue. It's a culture issue because black men do it and white men do it. I don't know the proportionality of that. And people are like, that's not even true. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm worried about that. I don't want to see all of a sudden, like, nothing is racist and nothing is offensive. And we can say, you know, it's frustrating to me because then the swing back will be even more extreme in the other direction. I just think it's a little anti-gay, honestly. Not that I think you're anti-gay or any of you are anti-gay.
No, I mean,
but I think the blowback is... You don't think he's gay?
I
play the video again. I shouldn't have done my Nazi salute there. Yes.
So...
Okay, maybe not.
See, with the pom-poms and, like, this little move that he's going to do right there, like, that's where the cheerleader or the male cheerleaders of yesteryear didn't do.
They didn't groove quite like that. They couldn't move their hips quite like that. Yeah, I think we're seeing backlash against radical ideologies and the alphabet mob go a little bit too far in the other direction, in my opinion. All right, we'll get to some comments and then a closing sanity check. You guys are also going to be mad at me about maybe, I don't know. The internet was real mean to me yesterday, but it's okay. I only cried myself to sleep for like 2 hours. Don't worry about it. I didn't cry myself to sleep. If you want a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. This is one of those things I think everyone should get a second opinion on. You only get one retirement. We're all working hard toward it, chugging along, got our dreams. So you want to make sure your retirement portfolio is properly protected against risk. You want to know how it's performing with the ups and downs in the markets, with what's happening globally, etc. So reach out to our friend Zach Abraham. Go to KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Don't put it off. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Say, Brandy told me to call you to get a second opinion, and he would be more than happy to do that. Okay, some comments on Seattle tourism being down. Greg Olakis says, I'm sorry, but the viaduct was an iconic piece of Seattle. Loved driving that stretch. It was pretty to drive. It was pretty for the city. Right along the waterfront for the city. It was hideous. But Greg, you're entitled to your opinion. Mm-hmm. Kathleen, very little retail left downtown. Public transportation doesn't feel safe. Hotels are very expensive. Attics on the streets. Restaurants are expensive. Hot rat summer. Yeah. Watermelon, are they digging under my house, chewing up the electrical wiring, talking about the rat? Are transgender people digging under your house, chewing up the electrical wiring? I hope not. De Gentle Rain, a rat is their saint? LOL, that tracks. On the homeless camp that was swept just moving two blocks up the road, Ashley Jones on Patreon says, what is actually insane is that I work in the recovery community for a nonprofit, and the state keeps giving us less and less funding to help, and we have more people in need than ever before. It feels like we aren't even putting a dent in the issues. Yeah, I wonder why they're giving you less money, because I know they're not spending less money overall on homelessness. On the state pushing back against the report of illegal voters, in quotes, Brain173, if the state tightened up on ID and citizenship documentation and ballot harvesting, Dems wouldn't enjoy the supermajority they currently exploit. On free gender care being offered to the homeless folks in Olympia, Papa Woody says it is illegal not to have, oh, it is illegal not to have health insurance. I learn something new every day. Is that via the ACA made it illegal? Because then you can have the state, the government insurance and stuff. Sorry, I should know that. I guess I don't.
Yes, I believe that's why. Yeah, that's what made it illegal. And then that's why they made the AC. That's why you have Apple Health. And that's why.
Yeah. And then that's why you got that tax document where you had to. Okay.
Yep. Now you get penalized if you don't have it. Like, we would get penalized. I don't know if the homeless are getting penalized.
Homeless aren't getting penalized.
Obviously, you and I would get penalized.
Stu Padasso says, if you think healthcare is expensive now, wait until it's free. Yeah, that's the most expensive crappy healthcare there is. On Bob's affordable housing plan, Old Sub Sailor with a super chat, affordable housing is another method for politicians to line their pockets. It also provides the ability to control the population. It's so clear what their goals are, socialism and communism. And you also said, Brandy, you and Nicole, Miranda, and Dee are the source of conservative truth we have. Thank you for keeping us all informed, educated, and aware. You are trusted and needed. That is really nice.
Precious.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. On Florida Report, Jeremy Hubble, well, Florida may have some cray-cray peeps living there, but that dude's speech was awesome. Yeah, he's great. I love that sheriff. I wish he was my sheriff.
And the cray-cray peeps keep it interesting.
Yeah. All right, one more. Nancy Campbell with a $4.99 super chat. Gonna miss Brandy and Nicole while they're on vacation, but my blood pressure will go downward. Yeah, we're still gonna have stuff for you. We're doing an edition of Truth Tellers, and we still got two more weeks, so you guys are gonna be just fine. And it lands on a holiday week anyway, when we would have had a short week, so it's gonna be fine. I mean, I'm gonna miss you guys, obviously. Okay. Nicole, thank you for that. With that, don't yell at me. Let's get to our closing sanity check. I feel like Nicole's also wondering why I'm saying don't yell at me, because she doesn't know that my take on this is going to be I don't agree with it.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. So U.S. Attorney for D.C. Janine Pirro put out a video, and you probably have seen this by now. There was a enraged man who, of course, Trump has all the Fed agents out in D.C. patrolling the place. And this guy is holding a Subway sandwich a foot long, and he's big mad at these federal agents for being there. He's calling them fascists. And then he throws his sandwich at one of them. Here's what Janine Pirro had to say about it.
So President Trump has vowed to make D.C. safe and beautiful again. And as part of his effort to fight crime, he's bringing in our federal law enforcement partners like FBI, ATF, DEA, or Park Police, everybody to help the Metropolitan PD fight crime. And the president's message to the criminals was, if you spit, we hit. Well, we didn't quite do that the other night when an individual went up to one of the federal law enforcement officers and started jumping up and down, screaming at him, berating him, yelling at him. And then he took a Subway sandwich about this big and took it and threw it at the officer. He thought it was funny. Well, he doesn't think it's funny today because we charged him with a felony, assault on a police officer. And we're going to back the police to the hilt. So there. Stick your Subway sandwich somewhere else.
Okay, all right, don't come at me. A felony for throwing a sandwich at a police officer is ridiculous. It is. And especially coming from an administration, I'm going to say it, that pardoned J6ers who actually assaulted police officers, which I've always been opposed to. Commutation of sentence might have been fine. Pardon, absolutely ridiculous. So you can't do both those things at once. Should he have been arrested? Absolutely. But I don't think the Subway sandwich being thrown amounts to a felony. I think that's a little much, a little heavy-handed. Although, Nicole, don't look at me like that. Turns out, though, that he was a Department of Justice employee.
Yes.
So he got fired, which I think is appropriate. Lose his job, maybe a misdemeanor. Well, for sure a misdemeanor. I'm not saying you shouldn't get anything. But I think it's a little insane to say a felony for throwing a sandwich at cops. I'm going to say it.
What are you doing?
I have a long track record of supporting law enforcement. I think that's too much. And again, they pardoned J6ers who actually assaulted law enforcement.
That's but if I went up to a cop
and you throw a sandwich at them, a
I would
felony,
expect. I would
I'm
expect
not saying
something.
It shouldn't be a crime.
I mean,
of course.
Like, of civil, course. Like. You deserve no. I know.
I just don't think a felony. I don't think a felony. I don't think a felony.
If that happened to you, any family member, you would be like, throw the book at him.
Yeah. Anyway, so you guys are going to come at me for that. That's fine. I have a long track record of supporting law enforcement and law and order. And there's just some hypocrisy here. There's some hypocrisy. We have to be honest with ourselves. Nicole's angry. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. We've got a fantastic interview coming up on Sundays with subscribers. Did you know that Moms of Liberty, of course, is vilified, but police officers are being trained to treat them as a hate group? Well, we'll be joined by Moms of Liberty, Moms for Liberty, rather, to talk about that on Sundays with Subscribers. If you have not signed up to support the show already, if you want to, after I say that you shouldn't be charged with felony.
What if you knew that was an Antifa member that does that all the time to cops?
Still, I don't think it should be a felony.
Like, what if he has a record?
Action's not affiliation. Well, yeah, but then your offender score might be higher so that you would have a felony or you would spend more time in jail. If you've got some, there's a lot of circumstances here. But lost his job. Now, if that was a tuna salad sandwich, those get heavy. So maybe it hurt a little bit more. I need to know what kind of toppings
and
he had
on
there.
I know you love Subway bread. Just for that alone, I'm surprised. The waste of bread.
Oh, well, no. Felony for wasting a Subway sandwich. No, I'm... You guys know I support law enforcement. We got to be realistic here. Come on. People are very mad at me. $2 super chat from Papa Woody. Assault is assault, even if it's a sea lion, Brandy. Oh, because my husband got bit by a sea lion. Yeah, that sea lion should have been charged with a felony for sure. All right, we'll see subscribers on Sunday. We'll see the rest of you Monday.